Getting kids outside to play in the dirt is good for the body, the mind, and the soul. It's Talk of Iowa. Good morning. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's Horticulture Day, and today we'll talk about getting your kids involved in the garden. Whether you're a parent, a grandparent, or a teacher, gardening with kids can be a wonderful learning experience and a whole lot of fun. My guest, Cindy Haynes, is an assistant professor of horticulture at Iowa State University. She specializes in educating young people through horticulture, and we'll explore how to get your kids excited about working in the garden and what you can all gain from the experience. And of course, Iowa State University Extension horticulturist Richard Giron is here, as he is each Friday, and he and Cindy will answer your questions about your yard and garden. 866-780-9100. Join the conversation. It's Talk of Iowa. Good morning. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's Horticulture Day today, and today we're going to spend part of the hour talking about gardening with kids, how to get kids involved and what they can learn from the experience. And of course, as the hour goes on, we will be answering your questions about what's going on in your yard or garden. Iowa State University horticulturist Richard Giron is here with us today. And also today, Cindy Haynes, an associate professor in the horticulture department at Iowa State. Thank you both for being here today.
Thank you. Morning.
And Cindy, I want to start with you because I know you've done a lot of research about young people and gardening. What can kids gain from working in the garden? Why is that important to you?
Actually, they can gain a lot of life experiences, and we can teach them a lot of things. Believe it or not, a garden is a great classroom to teach kids about math, about colors, about vocabulary, about anything, life cycles of insects, and how to have fun and continue that lifelong learning process.
So when you start to try, let's talk about parents with young kids. When you start to try to get those kids involved in the garden, what are some good starting projects?
Well, I think some starting projects is just let them explore just a little bit. So think about babies that can roll around on the grass and just to feel the texture of a lawn. Or if you have a lamb's ear nearby and the texture, that velvety kind of texture, pubescence of that leaf, how soft it is. And then some spiny or thorny things or rough things. So they're those tactile responses is what they're called, so that they learn the difference between something soft and something hard, like concrete. And hopefully they're feeling the concrete and not falling on the concrete. So things like that in the garden, and getting them out and feeling, you know, the sun, the warmth of the sun, and then the coolness and of the shade, and maybe the breeze of a ornamental grass.
And as they get a little bit older, you know, there are some wonderful things that you can do with kids in the garden. And then there are the things that the kids don't want to do in the garden. So how do you get them engaged in a positive way?
Well, and how do you make sure you just try and make it fun? So pulling weeds or planting a vegetable garden and maintaining it becomes a drag after a while for a kid, because they want it to happen overnight. They plant something and they don't have a lot of patience, and they want to go out the next day and harvest, and it takes a little bit longer. So have fun with it. Get them tools that are their size that they can handle. So, and that's a lot of fun, of digging in the dirt and say, okay, we want to till or dig this little area, and let's have a contest. And who can, you know, have the largest weed pile at the end of the day or at the end of 15 minutes? Let's be realistic. It's going to be 15 minutes.
Right. That's the other problem, of course, is you want to get out there and really spend a lot of time and work on your garden, and they don't want to spend 2 hours weeding.
And then I think about those things that are pretty fast turnaround. So, you know, when I'm planting things with kids, I think about those things that are easy to be successful with, lettuce and radish. And yeah, they're probably not going to eat a radish, but they might try a beet, you know, or they might try some peas or some beans, so that are pretty quick. And then still have the pumpkin that's going to take all season, still have the sweet corn that's going to take a little while, that they're really going to enjoy, and even the tomatoes. But, you know, have some of those things that they can be doing earlier as well as later. And then in between, investigate and explore. So maybe it's not every day out there weeding, but one day it's chasing butterflies. Or let's investigate the bees that are pollinating. Let's not touch the bees, but let's investigate the bees. Or let's go for a walk in the woods and look at something totally different. Look for wildflowers, or let's just sit here and take pictures and see if we have any birds that come to the garden. So it's just looking and listening and thinking and talking.
We have, in my old house, we had a garden, and my husband had made pathways
edged by pavers.
Mm-hmm.
And my 2-year-old son's favorite game this spring was, in his words, pick up rock, see worm.
Right.
So
right.
He picked up pathways and pathways full of pavers to see worms.
But, right. And my son loves digging in the dirt to find earthworms as well. And then, of course, he can slam on back into the ground and say, night, night, go back to sleep. So it's, you know, which some of them I don't think ever woke up afterwards. But just that process of digging and exploring and having that free time.
And why do you think that's important for children to have?
Well, I think that's because as they're learning, they're learning based on their experiences. And this is just offering new experiences. And even though my 2.5-year-old likes digging up pea gravel, you know, buckets of pea gravel and checking it out, it's just feeling that texture and feeling that weight and then experimenting and what they can do with it. Which sometimes mean you really have to watch them carefully because, you know, a river rock can travel through glass. But it's a lot of fun to kind of have them test that and test their limits and test what things can do. And then they're so overjoyed when they work on something and they can harvest some sort of fruit. I was on vacation with my son last week, and we were in Portland, and we were staying with family who have blueberry bushes in their yard. And every day he wanted to go harvest the blueberries. And it was great because he learned very quickly that a blue blueberry tastes a lot better than a green blueberry. So we had a little lesson on harvest and what it takes to harvest something. And that's a lot of fun.
So. It's hard sometimes for parents to let go like mm-hmm. that and let the kids make mistakes
sure.
and just mess around in the mm-hmm. dirt. I think a lot of parents feel like they need to be teaching their children
sure.
something every second.
And you don't have, they will learn some of these lessons. It's okay to fail, and failure is a great lesson. They also need that time to explore, that time to play, that time to hide in a garden, that time to water, to get dirty, to get messy. To, you know, like I said, enjoy all aspects of the garden, the good and the bad sometimes, because that's what learning is about.
We've also found in our family that we've had to make some sacrifices about the quality of
yes.
our produce. And
or the quality of your display gardens, you know, all of those things. There are some sacrifices because they will find something that they want to take ownership of and let them, because it might be a little weedier than maybe some other places, or it might not be the perfect beans or the perfect tomatoes, but it's all about a process.
Or your grapes may never get ripe.
Right, 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 because they're constantly harvesting or pulling
right.
on the vines. And that's okay. Let them experiment. You know, this year it's a process. You know, this year it might be this way, but next year it might be different. You might have a little more time and can work a little bit more with them, or they might have a little more patience, they should, to actually wait for that grape to be ripe.
Now, you also work with teachers who mm-hmm. teach students in mm-hmm. the garden. What kind of lessons do you encourage teachers to do in the garden?
Well, gardening is overwhelming for a lot of adults and a lot of teachers as well. Kids have no fear of being in the garden and trying and doing new things. But as adults, we get very fearful that we're going to do something wrong. So I think with teachers I work with, sometimes making sure that they're not so overwhelmed. Here's some simple things that you can start with and just experiment. And it's okay, once again, to not be 100% successful all of the time.
And so what's a favorite garden lesson for you?
Well, in the Growing in the Garden curriculum, one of my favorite lessons is the sunflower house, where they just kind of grow sunflowers in a square. Starting from seed, because it's really easy to grow sunflowers from seed. And then they go out and take like weekly measurements of how big the plants are getting. And then they have little activities that they do inside the sunflower house just to sit. So it's just watching the sunflowers grow, in a sense, and watching that progress.
And the idea is that the sunflowers create a kind of an outdoor playhouse.
Right.
The walls made out of the,
right.
the flower stems.
They create their own little secret garden. So, and sometimes that's where, you know, kids like to be, is to sit and read a book in the shade of a sunflower house. And then at the end, they have something that they can use, those sunflower seeds that they use to feed the birds that have been invited to the garden all through the growing season. So something very simple. And then you can take it to something very complex with older children. You can calculate, you know, how many seeds you get off that sunflower head and how to store them. And then, okay, how are we going to plant them next year? Or are we going to, you know, create these fill these bird feeders with them? So there's lots of opportunities that you can make it very easy or a lot more complicated.
Is there some sort of resource that you turn people toward for parents and for teachers that they can see if they want to try to do this on their own?
Yeah, the Growing in the Garden curriculum is one that I've referred to. It's an ISU curriculum that's really great for teachers for that K-3 to really get them, the teachers and the kids, interested in gardening. There's also lots of other books out there. One of my favorites called A Child's Garden, and it looks at the garden through a child's eyes. So making sure that you have things like water and that place to hide and a place to play and a place to dig in the garden, so that you accomplish all those kind of goals and you all experiences maybe that children need in the garden.
You can join our conversation if you have questions for Cindy or if you've been trying to get your kids involved in gardening and maybe you've run up to some hurdles, because I think any parent knows that you're going to run into hurdles that you never suspected were there when you mm-hmm. when you try to do something that you think is going to be fun. If mm-hmm. you have some questions, give us a call at 866-780-9100, 866-780-9100. You can also tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And of course, in just a few minutes, we will be answering your questions about your yard and garden. 866-780-9100. Cindy, have you found, I know you've been working on this research for a long time. Mm-hmm. As a parent, have you found that there are some practical problems that you didn't foresee?
Oh, with everything. There's always the problem of the weather. That always kind of creates issues when you're planning on doing anything outdoors or growing anything outdoors. There's also the practical problems of, you know, what do you do in the meantime when something is growing? So you have to have these little activities planned throughout and be flexible with them, because sometimes you might get it accomplished and sometimes not. So, and that's why we always have some indoor arts and crafts that we can do, you know, with those sunflower seeds that you've purchased, or we can, you know, plan something out on paper and with just crayons.
Do you find that a lot of teachers would like to do more with the garden, but of course school isn't in session
right.
in gardening season?
Right. We don't live in California where we can go grow a garden during the school year. So that does create some issues. Cool season gardening is usually possible in schools, because we can grow some things like lettuce and spinach and radish and maybe even a few beets early in the season, and then we can do it again in the fall. So there's ways around it.
And you might even convince some kids to eat vegetables, too.
That would be the ultimate goal.
All right. You're listening to Horticulture Day on Talk of Iowa. With me today, Cindy Haynes, an associate professor in horticulture at Iowa State, and Iowa State University horticulturist Richard Giron. We're ready to answer your questions at 866-780-9100. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. It's Talk of Iowa. Good morning. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's Horticulture Day today, and with me are Richard Giron, Iowa State University Extension horticulturist, and Cindy Haynes, an associate professor in the Horticulture Department at Iowa State. And we are here to take your calls at 866-780-9100. If you have any questions or stories that you'd like to share about working with kids in the garden, that's mm-hmm. been our topic of conversation, please give us a call. And of course, if you have questions about your yard or garden, 866-780-9100 is the number to call. And we have on the line right now Barb from Iowa City. Hello, Barb.
Hi. I wanted to talk about an experiment we did in school when I was a child. Mm-hmm. And it was wonderful. It demonstrates the growth of roots. And
okay.
we took a glass or a jar, uh-huh. and there was a paper towel that went around the inside of the glass, and then wedged between the paper towel and the glass, we put a corn seed, mm-hmm. a kernel mm-hmm. of corn. Mm-hmm. And then I don't know if we put soil inside that to keep the paper against the glass, but you could visually see the corn growing.
Right.
And that's something you can do when it's, you know, winter time or
right.
you can't put it into the ground.
Yeah, no, I've seen that as well. And I've actually seen people where they take a little soybean or a corn seed and put it in a tiny little Ziploc bag
uh-huh.
with a wet cotton ball.
Okay.
And then they make a little, punch a hole in the top of the bag so that it doesn't still stay sealed, and wrap it around their neck. So,
oh, wow.
So you kind of make this little corn necklace or the soybean necklace. And so you keep it in a warm spot next to your body, and it stays moist because of the cotton ball, and then it starts to germinate. So you have, so there's lots of fun things that you can do with seeds, and they're amazing when they germinate. And kids will ask lots of questions when they see that happening.
And Barb, it must have made an impression on you.
Oh, mm-hmm. Absolutely. I remember it to this day, and I'm a voracious gardener.
Excellent.
Well, thank you very much for your call, Barb.
Bye-bye.
And now turning to questions for Richard and Cindy as well. Danny is on the line from Cedar Rapids. Hello, Danny.
Hey, how's it going?
Good. What would you like to ask about?
Yeah, I have a rose bush that has been growing for the last 8 years inside of my house. And all of a sudden this year, it just doesn't want to come up. It looks like it died. I usually put the normal rose bush spikes into it in the ground. But I just wonder, is there any way I could bring it back to life?
Okay, there's no signs of life at all?
No.
Okay. Well, then I'm assuming it basically winter killed. We did have a very cold winter. Most plants were covered with snow, so they should have been okay. But
I usually put a plastic bag on top of it and put like a container on top, because my grandfather used to tell me that all the time. And it just seems like when I uncovered it this year, and I put the rose spike in the ground like I normally do, I never got no green stems out of it. It just seems like it's dead. Should I replace it, or?
Right. If you don't see any growth at all this year, haven't seen any growth at all this year, then I would assume it's dead, and I would look for a replacement next spring.
Okay, so it's too late in the season to replant it?
Oh, you possibly could, but I think at this point I'd wait and do it next spring. You can still plant potted roses. You could still do that. But
okay.
I'd be inclined to wait and do it next spring. You'll typically have a much wider selection to choose from next spring, and then they'll have the entire growing season to get established. So I'd probably wait.
All right.
Okay.
Well, sorry about
okay.
your rose bush, Danny.
Well, thank you, and I'll take my question off the air.
Thank you. Thanks a lot. Have a great day. We've got Sharon on the line in Johnston. Hello, Sharon.
Good morning. I have this Rose of Sharon bush that's on the west side of my house, and it's about 6 or 7 feet tall. But a 60-mile-an-hour wind came through,
man.
And it's leaning over, and it's heavy with bloom. And I was wondering, could I cut that back to help it straighten up sometime this fall, or would that help?
Well, what you might want to do maybe is try to pull it back.
And stake it?
And stake it. And leave it over winter and see what it does next spring.
Mm-hmm.
Or you go out maybe with some twine and...
Well, there's some wires that come into the house at that particular area, and I'm kind of leery about putting a stake or stakes in there.
Okay. You don't necessarily, you can pull the stake kind of out of the area and just have the tie. We're just trying to get it to kind of lift back up a little bit so it can reestablish some of those roots. And if you can wait to prune it until it's dormant, I think it might actually do a little bit better. Sometimes if we prune late in the season, that encourages new growth, which may not overwinter so well. And we don't want a whole lot of lush new growth just yet.
No.
Because the root system is still kind of precarious to some extent.
Mm-hmm. So wait until like early next spring and see if I can trim it then when it's still dormant.
Mm-hmm. And if you can in some way just kind of prop it back up or get it straightened up so that it doesn't have that nice little curve it's going to get if it doesn't get straight in some way, that would be helpful.
Okay.
So the fact that it's leaning, would that necessarily damage the plant? I know it's not the ideal picture-perfect bush, but would the plant be okay if it doesn't get pulled back up?
As long as you don't see any exposed roots, I would assume the damage is minimal.
Mm-hmm.
But if you do see exposed roots, then that becomes quite serious, potentially. So as long as you don't have that, then I'm assuming it's okay, even though aesthetically it may not look the best.
And if it's leaning a lot, you know, over time it'll try and straighten itself up. And like I said, you'll get a little bit of a curve in that new growth, which could look a little odd.
Or add character.
Add depending character. On. That's depending on your outlook.
All right. Good luck with that, Sharon. The number to call is 866-780-9100. You can also tweet us at IPR Talk or send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And we've got Ray on the line in Mason City. Hello, Ray.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call.
Thank you for calling. What would you like to talk about?
Last night, late afternoon, I was walking from the mailbox across my yard, and all of a sudden, the earth caved in. Looked down, and it was just a whole millions of red ants. And I've had black carpenter ants in the past. That when I'd hit them with a lawnmower, I'd have there'd be a hump in the ground.
Mm-hmm.
And how I handled it, I was a painting contractor, and I used a Wilbond, or didn't necessarily kill them, but it made them move. And I did that about three times and moved them off my yard. Now, I don't know about red ants, whether that same method would work, or have you got any ideas?
Well, normally we don't worry about ants. In most cases, they're not very destructive. Sometimes they'll build these fairly large mounds. And they can be kind of annoying, and they can be kind of destructive when that happens. When that happens, you can go out with a rake and just maybe kind of rake the mound down. You could possibly treat the mound with an insecticide. Those are the typical control methods.
Well, this wasn't a mound. I stepped on it, and it's a hole.
Mm-hmm. Well, I would probably bring in some soil from a different site and kind of fill that hole. And if the ants return, possibly treat that with an insecticide.
Well, I wondered, too, we just got a lot of rain this morning, mm-hmm. whether that will kind of deter them a little bit, too, that they might get flooded out.
Well, they might go elsewhere, possibly, right.
Right. Well, and if maybe you scrape the top of the mound off, so that may not be such a nice home anymore.
Mm-hmm.
Well, good luck with that, Ray. I know red ants can be a nuisance, especially if you're wearing sandals. It's always a problem. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. And we have time for one quick call. Here's Gerald on the line in Waverly. Hello, Gerald.
Yes, I have two trees that are pretty close together, and I'm thinking of eliminating one. One is a pine and one is a linden tree, which is now being attacked the last 2 years by Japanese beetles.
Mm-hmm.
If I take out, which one would you take out? Will the Japanese beetles will eventually destroy that linden tree?
No, they will not. They will not. They can cause damage in mid to late summer, but they're not going to destroy the tree. What kind of pine tree is it?
It's a blue spruce that's gotten on the corner of the house that's gotten too big for over the years.
Mm-hmm.
And the two are so close together that right. I just didn't want to take out the one that was going to survive.
Which one looks the best at this point?
They both look pretty bad. The top is brown on the linden tree.
I think I would probably leave the linden and take out the spruce.
Okay, that was my thought.
All right, well, good luck with that. Thanks so much for your call, Gerald. You're listening to Horticulture Day on the Talk of Iowa. Today we've got Iowa State University Extension horticulturist Richard Giron with us and Cindy Haynes, associate professor in the Hort Department at ISU. And we're taking your calls at 866-780-9100. You can also send us email at talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. This is Talk of Iowa. It's Talk of Iowa. Good morning. I'm Charity Nebbe. It is Horticulture Day today on the Talk of Iowa, and we'd love to find out what's going on in your yard or garden. You can give us a call at 866-780-9100 if you have some questions, need a little bit of help. Richard Giron, Iowa State University Extension horticulturist, is here, and Cindy Haynes, an associate professor in the Hort Department at ISU. They are here to answer your questions. Again, the number is 866-780-9100. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org, or you can tweet us with your questions at IPR Talk. And Eve is on the line in Coralville, returning to our original topic of kids and gardens. Hi, Eve.
Hi. I was calling to say I was a California ag teacher.
Oh.
Yeah, and the head of public instruction came down with the idea that all the classes would have gardens, basically every school, even if it was nothing more than a couple of pots on a shelf.
Right.
And they tied it directly to cooking. Alice Waters was one of the people who initiated this.
Mm-hmm.
The only problem was California had gotten rid of all the home economics classrooms. So cooking and gardening didn't go together quite as well. But the thing was they pushed cooking and good nutrition
mm-hmm.
for kids who had no experience of good nutrition.
Mm-hmm.
It was to fight obesity.
Right.
And I think it's a really good thing for Iowa, especially since we have several places that handle heritage crops, such as Seed Savers,
mm-hmm.
and also, I can't even think of all the names of all the places, but there's at least five places that specialize in this. I think we ought to do it in Iowa.
Yeah, a garden in every classroom really started the trend of school gardens all over the country. And yes, right now it is looking at, you know, teaching history and teaching and training kids about nutrition and obesity and cooking. And it's a wonderful idea, the connections that can be made with the garden.
Isn't there a program called the Edible Schoolyard?
Yep, the Edible Schoolyard. There's a whole bunch of other programs out there as well. Lots of books. You know, you just Google kids and gardening and you're going to come up with a ton of different ideas and things and books.
I'm sure there are many schools in Iowa mm-hmm. that have done this already, but this was a mandate that every school in California had to have a garden?
It basically was that if a school opted to join the program, you were given money, resources, and training.
Mm-hmm.
But the other thing is it opened up a whole slew of careers to the students to make them think about this as being something they could do professionally.
Mm-hmm.
Well, mm-hmm. great. Thank you so much for your call, Eve.
You're welcome. Good luck.
Thanks a lot. Maybe that'll get some other people thinking and looking around for some resources as well. Joel is on the line and wants to talk about a red bud. Hello, Joel.
Hi.
What's your question?
I have a red bud. It's probably about, maybe 7 or 8 inches in diameter in my front yard, north-facing side of my house.
Mm-hmm.
And for the last few to several years, it's been progressively drying up and losing leaves on kind of one half of the tree, the side that faces the house. And it seems to be getting worse and worse, and I'm wondering if it's just dying and we need to give up on it, or if there's something I can do about it.
Well, that one portion may be dying slowly, and if it does, you have to look at it, and if you remove that affected branch, are you going to have a suitable tree left as far as being a attractive, nice tree? And if you would, then I would simply cut out that one branch and see what happens. If you were to take off that branch and would basically have something that's really not very attractive to look at, you might consider replacing it.
Okay.
So I would base it on what would that tree look like if you have to remove that one branch? And go from there.
Okay. Well, it's probably at this point, it's probably as much as half of the tree.
Mm.
Okay.
So, is it some kind of disease, or that could be treated somehow?
It's hard to say. If it were a disease, I think the most likely possibility would be something like verticillium wilt, which is a fungal disease that attacks the vascular tissue inside the stem or the branch, and that's not treatable. Basically, you can't get at it. And so if it was something like verticillium wilt, if it was, there really is no treatment per se. There's no fungicide treatment. There's nothing that you can do. When the branch dies, you prune out the dead branch and then kind of cross your fingers that it's not going to spread to the rest of the tree.
All right. Well, good luck with that, Joel. Thank you so much for your call. The number to call is 866-780-9100. And Carl is on the line in Palo. Hello, Carl.
Well, hi. Thanks for your information, all the information. It's really great. The problem I have or the question I have is grabgrass seems to be driving like crazy in the yard. When to treat it and how to treat it?
Crabgrass.
Oh, crabgrass. Okay.
Crab or watergrass, whatever
yeah.
you
yeah.
want.
Yeah. Crabgrass is a very common lawn weed. It's done really, really well the last few weeks because of all the moisture.
It's everywhere.
The nice thing is that crabgrass is an annual grass. It will die this fall with the first hard freeze. There's really no way to control it at this point this year. And so you just keep your lawn mowed. It looks halfway presentable that way.
It's green, right?
It's green.
It's green.
Kind of a light green, so it's very noticeable. But just keep it well mowed. It will die this fall with a hard frost or freeze. It does come up from seed, so you need to put on a pre-emergent next spring or a crabgrass preventer next spring, and that will prevent the seed from germinating next year. And in Iowa, we typically apply those materials. If you live in central Iowa, typically sometime around April 15th to May 1. And those materials are typically combined with fertilizer. So you actually do two things at once. You apply your pre-emergent herbicide. You also apply your lawn fertilizer, and you do two things at once. And so if you do that and you put it on at the right time, the right rate, you should get very good control next spring.
All right. Thank you so much for your call, Carl. And next up, we have Eric in Grinnell. Hello, Eric.
Hi. How's it going?
Great. What would you like to talk about?
I have a vegetable garden, and I've never really had problems with it in the past until this year. And what's happening is a lot of the plants in one part of the garden have a lot of green material. They grow a lot of leaves and vines. For example, the green beans grew lots of vines, climbed up the trellis. And even flowers came out, but there were no pods. And the same thing with the green peppers that were nearby, you know, grew lots of leafy material, but no peppers. Broccoli, cauliflower in the same area, kind of the same thing. So the basil is in the same area, grew just fine. There's some sunflowers that are nearby that grew really well, but those ones, it's kind of mysterious, especially the green beans.
Well, I would say temperature can be a factor. When you have a plant and it blooms, if the temperatures are fairly high during the bloom period, that can affect pollination, where you may not get very good pollination, and therefore you don't really end up with fruit. So temperatures can be a problem, both night temperatures and day temperatures. So when we have a period where, let's say, it's in the upper 80s, low 90s, mid to upper 70s at night, those temperatures can interfere with pollination, and you have a nice plant, but you don't end up with fruit. So that may be a factor.
Okay.
So it's awfully nice to look at, but not giving you much this
year. Usually,
yeah, not much this year.
Yeah, but usually when the temperatures moderate, you'll get something forming at that point. So you may have a time where it's not doing much of anything. It's blooming. It's not doing anything. But then when the weather moderates and it's still blooming, those flowers then develop into fruit. So you may have a period where the pepper plants are not forming anything, and then all of a sudden you go out there and you see several that have formed in recent days. So,
so it might be too warm.
It could be. The temperature could be a concern.
Okay.
All right. Thanks a lot for your call, Eric. Thanks. I hope something shows up.
It will.
Okay, good. There's a lot of faith here in the studio. So next up we have Steve in Grinnell. Hello, Steve. No, I guess we don't have Steve in Grinnell. Sorry about that, Steve. If you're still around, give us a call back. Next we have Joy in Des Moines. Hello, Joy.
Good morning.
Hi there. What's your question today?
Well, a couple weeks ago in a windstorm, we lost a really large branch off of a maple tree in the backyard. And I need to know what, it's like there's an open wound now on the trunk of that tree. And what's the best thing to keep the tree safe and to save it?
The best thing to do is actually, after you've pruned off or removed that branch, is to do nothing. To let the tree seal the wound itself.
Okay.
Painting it or putting anything around it just kind of prevents the tree from doing its natural process. So it's hard, I know, because you see it and it's this big, sometimes this big gaping wound, but do nothing and it will do actually a pretty good job of sealing it all on its own.
Okay, that's what I need to know. Thank you.
All right, well, that's a great answer.
nice lazy answer, too, but
you don't
have
to do anything on that one. Deborah in Indianola wants to know what she can do to improve soil that is mostly clay.
What I would do, basically, would be find a source of organic matter.
Or compost.
Compost, well-rotted manure, bring that in, let's say an inch or two of that, and then incorporate that into the soil with a tiller or a spade, and do that this fall if you can. And then if you're still not happy next fall, do it again. Maybe add some more. And that should loosen the soil quite a bit.
All right. Thanks a lot. And Dave is on the line now in Spencer. Hello, Dave.
Good morning. A couple years ago, I planted some rhubarb from seed. And the location that I put them in, they're not doing very well. Can I transplant them now?
You can transplant those. I'd wait maybe another month or so and do it sometime in September. Would be fine.
Okay.
So maybe around mid-September, go out there, dig up the plant with a nice ball of dirt around the root system, and put it back in a suitable location, keep it well watered this fall. And next year, do not harvest next year, and
right.
go from there.
And okay. rhubarb from seed. Now, this is, we both kind of gave each other kind of an odd look, because we don't hear rhubarb from seed very often. So how did you do this? I mean, was there a lot of seed? Did you put it in the refrigerator before you sowed it, or did you just sow it back on the ground?
Well, actually, the rhubarb was going to be, it was kind of a heirloom kind of rhubarb, and it was going to be killed in the location, mm-hmm. and I just harvested a bunch of seeds from it in the fall and threw them in an envelope and then planted them the next spring,
okay.
and I got poor germination, but okay. I got some plants back, and now they're 2 years old.
Oh, perfect. Well, I learned something about growing rhubarb from seed. Okay.
Well, it sounds like you had tremendous luck. It looks, from the look on your faces, it doesn't seem like growing rhubarb from seed
well. Not very common, so.
All right.
Okay. Thanks a lot.
All right. Thank you very much. I hope your rhubarb comes back very well. And we have an email right now from Jeff in Cedar Rapids. He says, we've seen the development of spreading brown patches in our lawn in the last several weeks. Because we have observed white moths in the lawn, we believe we have sod webworms. Does that seem like a logical deduction? And will the grass come back once we treat it with the appropriate insecticide?
I would guess it's probably a disease. We've had all this moisture, very warm temperatures, and mm-hmm. those conditions are very favorable for disease. So I don't think there's a connection there between the moth and the browning. It's hard to diagnose turf diseases. They can go out and dig up a square, like a 6-inch square, and send that to the plant diagnostic clinic here at Iowa State, and then we'd have a sample to look at. But there are several different things that could be, and they're very, very hard to really identify unless you actually have a sample.
Okay, so don't go out and spray anything.
No,
is what
I don't think I would at this point. If anything, I'd try to have the sample identified by someone, a professional.
All right. Well, good luck with that, Jeff. If you'd like to join our conversation, you can call 866-780-9100. You can send us email at talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And next up, we have John in Ottumwa. Hello, John.
Good morning.
How are you today?
I'm fine. How are you?
Good. What would you like to talk about?
I have two very large trees. One's an oak tree and one's a maple tree. And they're about 6 to 8, maybe a little more than that, feet in diameter. So they're very, very old trees.
They're big.
And I noticed the last few years they're losing a lot of branches and the leaves seem to be not as thick. And I'm kind of afraid that they might fall over on my house. And I was wondering if I could get somebody to maybe come and look at them, see what they thought, or what should I do about that?
Now, you say you're concerned about that. Do you see any obvious rotting or decay on the trunks of the trees?
No, one tree has a lot of green moss on it, but other than
that,
no, I don't see anything.
Well, that's good, because that's the main concern, is if you have a big tree and then you see some obvious decay or rotting of the trunk, then that tree is no longer structurally sound, and it could fail in a storm. So as long as the trunk or the trunks are intact, apparently just fine, that's a very, very good sign. I would probably suggest contacting an arborist or a tree care professional, not just somebody with a chainsaw and a pickup,
a
true arborist or a tree care professional, and have them come out and then look at the trees, examine the tree carefully, and see if they can find something that would maybe suggest the tree is okay or maybe it should come down. But I would make sure it's a arborist or a tree care professional, very, very qualified that can examine those trees.
Yeah, I called the state forester from Fairfield, and he was going to come over and look at him. He hasn't yet. So is that a good plan?
That would be a good place to start. Yes, if he'll do that, yes, absolutely.
Okay, because I'm just kind of afraid that because the leaves are, you know, they're not very thick anymore and there's a lot of dead branches. I'm kind of wondering.
Right. Trees don't last forever. And when they're mature, they kind of slowly decline, but they still might hang in there for quite some time. as long as they're structurally sound as far as the trunk.
All right. Well, good luck with that, John. And Dave is the name of the moment. We've got our next, we've got two callers named Dave, and we've got an email from Dave. So we're going to try to get to all
Dave,
of our
Dave.
Daves here. Exactly. Here's Dave from Greeley. Hello, Dave.
Hello.
Hi. What's your question?
Yeah, I have a couple of elm trees in my yard, and I put them in last year, and all of a sudden one of them is, in the last 2 weeks, really started to turn yellow. The leaves have all turned yellow, every last one of them, and they're starting to fall off. And I'm wondering what causes that. It looks like it's headed to die, and the other elm tree that's planted like 30 feet away is doing great, and I'm wondering what could be the problem.
I'm really not sure. They can sometimes get a leaf spot disease where you might have spotting of the foliage and the rest of the leaf might turn yellow and fall off. That's a possibility. We've had a lot of rainy weather. Rainy weather is favorable for leaf spot diseases, so that's a possibility. The other thing would be, if that's not the case, I'm thinking for whatever reason, this one tree is simply not getting established at its new site, and in fact, it may be dying. And that would be a possibility. So if you don't see any spotting of the foliage, they're just turning yellow and falling off, that would be a distinct possibility. Don't know the exact cause for that, but sometimes trees just don't make it when you plant them. So that would be possible.
Even though it grew well last year, and then in the second year, there's that kind of a problem?
There still could be. When you plant a tree, it may take that tree maybe 3 or 4 years to get established at its new location. And so problems can occur the first few years. I don't know if all the rain this year has been a factor or not. Sometimes if you have very wet conditions, that can damage the root system. And if that's extensive, then that could have very dire consequences.
Well, I live in Delaware County, and you know the...
Yeah, it's been very wet.
And so... That is a definite possibility. I'm probably going to have to replace that tree, you think?
Well, I would wait and see what it does next spring. That will be the key. Does it leaf out next spring? If it does, terrific. If it doesn't, then obviously it is dead. So
now, faces around here are kind of brave, Dave.
So you'll know in a few months as far as its condition, I think.
All right. Thanks a lot for your call. And next we have Dave in Des Moines. Hello, Dave.
Hi. I'm Dave, too.
Yep.
I just moved to Norwalk. I have a beautiful little blue spruce in my front yard, and some nasty little viney thing is starting to come up around the trunk. It's kind of got like different leaves, anywhere from like a fig leaf to like almost a spearmint leaf. How do I get that thing out before it chokes that tree to death?
Well, I'd probably just pull it out at this point.
Okay.
Just pull it out. And if it reappears, pull it out again and just be persistent.
And make sure it's not winding around the trunk or branches and maybe kind of unwind anything so they can't girdle.
My main concern would be that it basically kind of climbs the plant and then grows on the outer part of the canopy, the evergreen, and kind of shades the evergreen foliage. That's
right.
Not a good thing, where if it does, that could maybe destroy some of the branches. So... whenever you see it, just pull it out.
Okay, very good. I have another short-leaf pine in my backyard that has been abused, and it's about 40 feet tall. I'd like to save it. What's the best first aid for something like this?
When you say abused, was it abused? Yeah. That's
well,
the key point.
It was in a clump of other trees that were taken away.
It was
pruned badly. It just looks like Charlie Brown's Christmas tree. It just needs love.
Well, you can just give it good care and see how it performs. Now, some trees, like an Austrian pine, for example, it may never recover very well. And so that's just reality. If it's not in very good shape now, it may never become a really nice specimen, but you can give it a couple years and see what it does. Just make sure that you don't do anything that might cause any damage to it, and just give it good care and see how it comes in the future.
All right. Well, thanks a lot, Dave. And we have about a minute left. Let's see if we can squeeze in Dean from Des Moines. Hello, Dean.
Good morning. I got a bunch of bare spots in my garden where lettuce and spinach was, and wondering, is there any kind of vegetables I can plant this time of year? I thinking about summer squash.
Oh, summer squash might be a little bit late, but you can go back to the spinach and the lettuce and the radish and even some cool season things like beets. So it's got to be a short turnaround time, so think those lettuce and spinach again.
All right. Well, good luck with that, Dean. And thank you very much for your calls today. Thank you, Richard Geron, Iowa State University Extension horticulturist, and Cindy Hain, associate professor in the horticulture department at Iowa State University. And, of course, we will be back again next Friday to answer your horticulture questions as well. And all this week we've been checking in with our RagBri correspondent, Jason Parkin, on the road. And Jason went home today. He said he wasn't going to receive a medal for riding all day in the rain. That was his exact verbiage. So we are not checking in with Jason and hope he has a safe ride home. And if you know anybody on the road, I hope they stay safe and dry today. Talk of Iowa is produced by Dennis Reese. Our executive producer is Jeff Schmidt. Production assistance today from Lindsay Moon. Technical support today from Tom Otting, and special help from Eric Jordan. Podcasting and on-demand audio of Talk of Iowa are available at all times at iowapublicradio.org. And of course, you can always send us email. Let us know if there's something you'd like to hear on the show. talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org is our email address. Our theme music was composed and performed by Dan Knight. I'm Charity Nebbe. Monday on the Talk of Iowa, the role African Americans have played in Iowa history. Talk of Iowa is a production of Iowa Public Radio News. ¶¶